purposes of this question, what are we talking about when we mean a nation is Christian or not?
Well, part of my whole argument in the book, and you know, we get too into this into the lecture, but part of my whole argument is that how you define that term is going to shape the way you think about this politically charged question.
Hello, and welcome to the Upwards Podcast. My name's Dan, one of your hosts, and I'm excited to share with you an episode with John Fia, a historian and a visiting fellow at the Lumen Center this year, as we debrief a lecture he gave at Upper House on November 14th on the question, was America founded as a Christian nation? You can check out those lectures in the show notes. There's three of them. It was a packed night. And we go over some of what was covered in the lectures, but also some of the follow-up conversation to them. John also has his own podcast called the Wave Improvement Leads Home podcast. Be sure to check that out, also linked in the show notes. Now to the conversation. Welcome to the Upwards Podcast, where we discuss the intersection of Christian faith in the academy, church, and marketplace. I'm here with John Fia, Distinguished Professor of History at Messiah College and a visiting fellow this year at the Lumen Center here in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, John.
Good to see you, Dan.
Yeah.
It should be fun.
It should be fun. We talk a lot down the hallway, so it'll be fun to put it on on recording. What we're doing here is we're doing a follow-up conversation to an event, a lecture you gave a few weeks ago now. On November 14th, it was one of our Friday night lectures, and it was called, as they all are, A Question, Was America Founded as a Christian Nation?
Right.
So this is a follow-up, so we're not going to go into all the things you argue and talk about in those lectures. But I think it'll be helpful to talk about the question in particular, what we make of the question, and then just a few follow-ups on the way you as a historian, American historian, who talk about these pretty contentious questions of the past, how you do that in settings where there's diverse viewpoints, different levels of education, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, great.
Okay, so first of all, give us a sense of what did you do on November 14th?
Sure. This is a tradition from, you know, what I learned very quickly when I got here. The Upper House, Stephen Laurel Brown Foundation, Lumen Center, has a tradition of a Friday night lecture. And it's a lecture in three 30-minute segments. So right there, this lecture is usually a sort of, when I give this lecture other places, usually like a 45-minute lecture with like 15 minutes of Q&A. So this is 30 minutes, 10 minutes of Q&A, then another 30-minute lecture, 10 minutes of Q&A, and then a third round. So, to be honest, it's exhausting. I know you've done one, Dan, and we kind of exchange notes about that.
Right.
So, yeah, this one was held I think there was a sporting event here in downtown Madison. So we held it in the headquarters of InterVarsity here in Madison. I thought there was a good turnout.
Yeah.
But what I tried to do is I just tried to lay out some thoughts about the whole question, right? Was America founded as a Christian nation? Thinking about that question as a historian. And then I just kind of gave some sort of highlights of my 2011 book by the same title, Was America Founded as a Christian Nation? We looked at, I think the first lecture, we sort of looked at the idea of the United States as a Christian nation. Mm-hmm. So we sort of historicized that idea, right? How have people thought about America as a Christian nation? Then we kind of focused in on the second lecture was on the Bible, the use of the Bible at the time of the founding. And then in the third lecture, we focused on some of the primary or the central documents to the Revolution, the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution specifically. There could have been seven or eight more topics I could have chose, you know, but those are the ones I thought would resonate well with the foundation crowd, so to speak.
Well, so on the foundation crowd, so we're here in Madison.
Yeah.
You've been here you've lived here for a few months now.
Yeah.
What did you make of the crowd that would show up to something like this in Madison, particularly at the university headquarters, maybe a little different than our normal clientele as well.
Well, I thought it was an interesting group, you know, because Madison is a university town. Christians who would come to a lecture like this tend to be a little more thoughtful than normal, maybe a little more open-minded, you know, maybe lean towards a particular answer to the question, was America founded as a Christian nation, which would mostly be no, I think.
Yeah.
Again, even the Christians, there were university people, members of the history department, right, of Madison who were there too, who, and that was the difficulty, right? Speaking to, this is a question that's bandied about within kind of Christian circles, but then having others there who maybe didn't know the subtext or didn't understand the, I'm speaking to a group that, is very interested and concerned about this question. And then I frame things in certain ways. So, I would say when I give this lecture in central Pennsylvania, which is largely, the middle of the state is very red politically, or when I give this lecture in, rural places or at colleges or universities in rural towns. I'm thinking of like Taylor University in Upland, Indiana, right? Mm-hmm. This rural place in Indiana. There's a lot more diversity on the question. People come, in terms of how they perceive the question, people come thinking that, yes, America was founded as a Christian nation, and they want to see me give them historical evidence to justify the case. Right. Here, I think the overwhelming majority would have kind of probably said no or taken at least a nuanced view of it. So that was interesting.
Yeah, yeah. I think we notice that a lot here in Madison. It's not a news if you're here, but just a very highly educated audience. So there's a lot of people in the room that actually have firsthand experience reading around this topic or even some of the primary sources in a way that in a lot of other settings that wouldn't be the case.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And it took me a while. It took me a while to sort of adjust to that, right? I'm always thinking of people who are going to push back on the, from the right on this question, so to speak, right? Mm-hmm. That, yes, of course we were founded as a Christian nation. And there wasn't much of that, even in the one-on-one conversations that I had with people, like during breaks and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Okay, so that takes us into my next question, which is, actually getting at, let's spend some time talking about the question, was America founded as a Christian nation? You've mentioned a few times, there's political significance to this question. This might be one of the main reasons why people ask it these days and try to argue one way or the other. But before getting to the significance, for you as a historian, when you ask yourself the question, was America founded as a Christian nation, how are you defining, I guess, the two biggest key terms are Christian and nation? So let's maybe start with Christian. Yeah. For the purpose of this question, what are we talking about when we mean a nation is Christian or not?
Well, part of my whole argument in the book, and we didn't get too into this into the lecture, but part of my whole argument is that how you define that term is going to shape the way you think about this politically charged question, right? So there's a lot of different ways. I think as a historian, I kind of push against the idea that there's only one way to identify Christian faith or adherence in the 18th century. So let me throw out some examples. What are we talking about? Are we talking about pure demographics, right? Mm. The number of people who are Christian in the society, that's a Christian nation. Are we talking about the way in which the founding fathers instilled Christianity into, or didn't instill Christianity into, the founding documents, right? There's nothing about Christianity in the Constitution. There's vague references to God and Providence in the Declaration of Independence, right? They didn't seem concerned about making those explicitly Christian in terms of theological ideas. Are we talking about who's Christian, right? An evangelical might say someone who has been born again, or, I think that's a probably narrow definition for the 18th century. Mm. Is it someone who goes to church, who's a member, who takes communion, right? Mm-hmm. So this is part of the kind of complicated nature of when you take a 21st century or late 20th century question, was America founded as a Christian nation, then try to superimpose it on the 18th century. There's, it all depends on how you define these terms.
Right. So one of the slides you had in that first lecture was listing a bunch of different people that don't really have similar politics or anything and are from different centuries who all at various points would have answered yes to the question, I guess, was America founded as a Christian nation, but had very different definitions of Christian and different reasons why they'd want that answer to be yes. So I think of you had Martin Luther King Jr. on that. You had a pope.
Pope Leo XIII,
from the late 19th century, and you had Jerry Falwell, who's a much more recent conservative evangelical.
Yeah,
yeah. So maybe talk a bit about those. To me, seem like some of the more extreme examples of how
they're all answering yes to this question in their various times and places, but it doesn't mean that they're sharing the same reasons or even the same purpose for saying yes.
And this adds another layer of complication, right, to your first question about what is Christian. Yeah. What's fascinating is about those pictures, I think I had a Billy Graham up there too, Mercy Otis Warren, who many, maybe the listeners, viewers don't know, was an early historian of the American Revolution, writing in the early 19th century, like 1802, I think, you know, so it's just a generation removed. But if you were to pull out their comments on America as a Christian, they all called America a Christian nation at some point. And if you were to take those comments and take them out of their historical context, for example, or, you know, just kind of read them without any, you know, knowledge of who the figure was or what they were known for in other, you know, in other endeavors, you would think you would be reading some of these so-called like Christian nationalists, you know, you would be thinking, you know, we need to reclaim this country as a Christian nation. You know, the social gospel author Washington Gladden said, right? We need to, you know, almost sounded like some kind of, you know, Calvinist kind of Dutch Reformed, you know, like we need to get every square inch and make it Christian. Well, what he meant was we need to solve the problem of poverty. We need to solve the problem of homelessness. We need to solve the problem of industrialization, of urbanization, and so forth, and all those social ills that come with that. But out of context, it looked like someone like David Barton, maybe some of your viewers know this guy, you know, could have said those things. Martin Luther King was constantly appealing to the Judeo-Christian. He used that term specifically, also used Christian nation, and a Christian nation was one that didn't segregate. A Christian nation was one that didn't have Jim Crow. So that was my goal in that first, you know, that this is a contested topic. It's not a new topic. It's not something that sort of, you know, began in the late 70s with Jerry Falwell. There really wasn't an argument about whether or not America was a Christian nation, broadly defined, allowing for all those differences, until the culture wars began in, you know, the 1980s. And that was my point, that this is not a question that Americans have been debating for 200 years.
Right.
This debate happened in a particular moment in time. And then we've taken that debate and we've kind of tried to look at the founding through the lens of that modern debate. And then it forces us to ask kinds of questions, that the kind of questions that people in the 18th century were not asking.
In some ways, the question, was America founded as a Christian nation, is a very difficult question.
Yeah.
Because it's not the emergence of the question isn't out of a, if there is any, pure historical interest in this question. I don't know if there's actually a pure historical interest question out there. We usually ask questions because we have some agenda. But this one in particular emerges out of a cultural, political conflict in the 1970s, 80s period. And so any answer to the question is already going to be a little awkward because you're asking a question that wasn't being asked before.
Well, this is what I said in the lecture, you know, at the end, you know, and I've said this before, but it's a bad historical question. Now, that may be surprising for people who know my work for me to say that. I have, you know, I had a book, I have two editions now of a book, a third one on the way of this book, which is, you know, titled Was America Founded as a Christian Nation? This was actually a little bit of a debate with the publishers, and they thought that this would sell better with that title than some kind of bland, you know, religion and the American Revolution or something like that. But it is a bad historical question, right? Because it's, again, taking a question that rose out of a particular moment in time, as you mentioned, this the 1970s and 80s, and then trying to force founders into that model. I mean, this is the ultimate form of presentism, if you want to call it that, right? And then what happens is the past, the 18th century at least, as you know, the revolution, the founding era, becomes little more than a place where you cherry pick what you need to advance your political agenda in the present. The left does this too, not only the right. And then that's not how historians work, right? That's not how we work. We look at the full complexity of the situation. I think, sadly, there are actually trained historians who don't get this, but that might be another podcast.
Sure. Okay, so we've talked about Christian as being a really difficult term to define, and it actually really depends on how you define it that will lead you a certain direction on your answer. What about nation? This was the other one. I remember talking to a few people in between some of the sessions, And this was another sort of like, you have different definitions of what are we talking about when we talk about a nation? Yeah. What are the different ways you might go about answering that?
Well, I think there's a lot of people on the right who would answer yes to the question, who make an argument, and I didn't get into this in the lecture, but I do talk about this in the book, who would make an argument that, you know, the early settlers, right? Mm. And we're talking about like the Pilgrims, Plymouth, 1620, Massachusetts Bay Puritans, 1630, even to some extent the Anglicans in, mm-hmm. you know, they didn't define, that wasn't their primary identification as Anglicans, but they did have Anglican worship in Jamestown, right? And Virginia, you know. Certainly, there was no sense of nationhood during those periods. If there was any kind of nationhood, it was a connection to Britain,
right.
Then it was to some kind of nascent United States, right? You know, I think the argument that the kind of seeds of American liberty were somehow planted in the soil of Jamestown or Plymouth or Boston, you know, it's just a really bad way of looking at colonial history, you know, and it's, you know, it's often referred to as a sort of Whiggish way of looking at, you know, I would argue by 1763, by the end of the French and Indian War, 13 years before the American Revolution, the trajectory, the colonies have become more and more British than American, right? To the eve of the revolution, you know, you have in 1763, at the end of the French and Indian War, the British victory over the French. I mean, the level of patriotism in the colonies is at an all-time high, but it's British.
Yeah, British.
You know,
yeah,
Hail
yeah.
Britannia, you know, this yeah. kind of thing. It's really hard to say, like, the seeds of the nation, of the United States of America, were born in those early settlements. You could make a case, right, that 1776 is, or 1789, when the Constitution is formally ratified, you know, that was the beginning of the nation. Mm-hmm. If you do that, you have a whole other set of questions that you want to ask, you know, about, you know, how much were these colonies conceiving themselves, or these now states conceiving themselves as a nation? What about the Articles of Confederation, this kind of loosely connected group of this confederation of colonies that existed between the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, mm-hmm. where they had no sense of a nation whatsoever. They were all just doing their own things. There was no, like a national, they called it a strolling government. It hardly ever met the national, quote unquote, national government. So, or, you know, there are historians who have suggested some sense of nationalism emerged like after the War of 1812 or even after the Union victory in the Civil War, right? Where the whole idea of kind of a confederation of loosely identified states' rights could no longer be legitimate, right? So it's, again, back to the way I answered the Christian question, you know, how you define nation is going to, again, you know, help you to make some kind of a present day argument about this question of religion and the founding.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So my sense is if I read around enough to know where a lot of the pro, yes, America yeah. was founded as a Christian nation stuff comes from. I don't know I don't read a lot of these books, but I just know the conversation. My sense is it's something, I just wanted to hear your feedback on this. My sense is it's something where both of these terms are a little vague.
Yep.
That there were Christian values. There were some of the founding fathers were Christian, but they didn't all have to be. There's something in the sort of milieu or the culture that was identifiably Christian, and that the nation is roughly, it goes back to the Pilgrims and things. So because you know the Puritans and others are more religious, so there's sort of more evidence there. But we're talking sort of in a general sense the culture of the founding era and sort of the inspiration for some of the distinctive values of American democracy come out of a Christian culture.
Yeah.
My sense is that's, you know, it's sort of what are the implications of that are where we get into the politics. But how would you respond to sort of this, you know, I realize it's not very, as I'm describing it, it's not very historically grounded. So it's like, well, show me the evidence of where you're seeing these things. But how would you respond to what I gather would be a pretty general sense by a lot of Christians in America that like that's what we're talking about when we talk about a Christian America?
Well, certainly the 18th century was a deeply Christian, even someone asked me this actually at the lecture in the Q&A, deeply Protestant culture. Absolutely. You know, and I think you could make an argument that a lot of even, you know, I think some of the more thoughtful defenders of a kind of Christian founding, you know, who are kind of conservative intellectuals, say, right? You know, I won't name names, but you know, I think some of these arguments that ideas of liberty and freedom and, you know, these things that have long been associated with the Enlightenment do have roots in older Christian ideas. You know, I'm thinking of people like, you know, Tom Holland or even Nick Wolterstorff has made this case about, you know, liberty and freedom and so forth. Yeah, I don't disagree with that. What I would say is the founding is much more complicated. Mm-hmm. And to claim that they were also not drawing upon Enlightenment thinkers, ancient thinkers, right, and so forth. I mean, you know, some of these people existed before Christ that they draw from, right? You know, Cicero and, you know, mm-hmm. people like this. Mm-hmm. So I think I don't want to simplify the founding. I certainly think Christianity had something to do with it, right? But when you're building public policy in the present, the fact that there were ancients or so-called, quote-unquote, pagan philosophers, as the early Christians would have called them, basically meaning non-Christian,
yeah.
right, were also contributing to the ideas that the founders were tapping into as classically educated men. Mm-hmm. You know, when you ignore that, you're building a political program on shaky historical ground.
Right.
Yeah.
And would you say, so, again, I don't know this literature as well as you do, but I get the sense that there's a reaction there to a perceived other argument that the founding was entirely secular,
yes.
or something like that. Help us understand that. Like, what's the
which
claim
is problematic?
There?
Which yeah. is problematic? Yeah, to claim that religion played no role whatsoever in the founding, or that all that it did was like offer up this idea of religious freedom, right? Mm-hmm. I think, you know, I'll take a shot here. I think Ken Burns' documentary handles religion, but all it is, you know, religious freedom. You know, you read some of the founders, right? You read Washington's farewell address. He's talking about morality and religion as a pillar of the republic. John Adams said that religion and morality, the Constitution was built for a religious and moral people, right? Mm. You know, which, you know, A lot of people, you know, say Trump supporters or whatever, like that quote. But that also cuts the other way, too, right? Moral and religious people, right? Mm-hmm. So certainly the founders believed that religion, Christianity even, because it was really the only game in town, was central to creating a good, and the word they would have used is virtuous, republic, creating a republic of citizens who at times were willing to lay down their own selfishness, their self-interest, for the greater good of the republic. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of really bad books out there, kind of the mirror image of the sort of, whatever you want to call them, Christian right, Christian nationalist books, the yes books.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That are just as bad, and they don't reflect the complexity and the nuance. And I think, you know, sometimes you have seen even left political agendas in the present invoking these,
mm-hmm.
you know, right. this vision of history, right?
Right.
You know, I think someone like, you know, very popular writer Howard Zinn, you know, would be an example of someone who seems to have no use for Christianity, only in the sense that maybe it would have riled people up to, like, you know, the mobs and the Stamp Act or something, right? You know, that's about it, so.
The podcast notes for today's conversation include a link to view this episode on YouTube. Remember to follow or subscribe to stay updated with our latest episodes in your podcast app.
Okay, so coming into the present, we've already established this is a question that's particularly important to late 20th century, 21st century Americans
yeah.
to answer one way or the other. And then we've just talked about that the answers, or there are a lot of answers that are very extreme on one side or the other. All yes,
yeah.
all no. The historians in the middle saying it's much more complicated than
yeah.
this.
I wish more were saying it was much more complicated, because this has polarized a lot of historians the way they think about the 18th
right, okay,
century,
okay.
too.
You're the historian at least sitting in the middle saying it's more complicated than
got
that. And so, I mean, help us understand what is at stake from your perspective. Like, you know, that's part of the complicated nature of from the outside looking in. It's like, you know, what about the late 20th, 21st century matters?
Yeah.
Whether or not you answer this, like, there's some implication that if it was in the past a certain way, yeah. we need to somehow make it that way today or something like that. But help us understand what's at stake in this debate.
Well, I mean, you know this as well as I, this story as well as I do, Dan. You know, again, if you're going to target, or, you know, focus on the when the question emerged to the late 70s, early 1980s, you see many evangelicals getting engaged in politics in a way that they hadn't been for much of the 20th century, right? And it mostly was conservative politics. It was the religious right, the moral majority, the Christian right, whatever you want to call it. You know, I think the bicentennial here is really interesting because, you know, a lot of these figures like Jerry Falwell, for example, are starting to emerge right around the time when we're celebrating the 200th anniversary of the nation. You know, Falwell does a God and Country tour in 1976. You know, he goes to every state capital with his choir from Liberty Baptist College, it was called at the time, now Liberty University. And they travel and do these God and Country rallies. And then, you know, he writes this book, Listen America, in which he basically articulates that we're a Christian nation and we need to reclaim this. So the idea of the myth, if you will, or the idea that America was a Christian nation, founded as a Christian nation, becomes what we historians call a usable past for the Christian right, the moral majority. I think the idea that church and state should be separated, that there's a high wall, it's impregnable, according to the 1947 Supreme Court and Hugo Black. I think the kind of secular version of American history, in terms of the world of religion, pretty much held the day for much of the 20th, much of the 20th century. So I think the argument then becomes, you know, more secularists. And when I say secular, I don't mean like secular humanists, like, you know, worried about atheists around every corner. I'm talking about the more historic understanding of the word secular, right? Separation of church and government, separation of church and state. I think that group are pushing back on this new revisionist history that seems to be taking hold in evangelical communities around the country with Falwell's moral majority. So I think that's where now it becomes a battle. The culture wars, in my mind, are essentially at the base, at the foundation of the culture wars, is an argument about American history and about the history of the American founding.
Yeah.
You can't go elsewhere. You know, it's hard to go elsewhere in those debates, whether it be marriage, abortion, whatever, without the foundational belief that America was founded as a Christian nation or wasn't founded as a Christian nation. If you can get that right, then you can make kind of American arguments, so to speak, for any moral problem that you see in the country.
Yeah. I think this is a place where I really appreciate being a historian, I guess, and just having some perspective on this to realize this is an interesting way of making arguments about contemporary society that is not what all countries do, right?
Like, interesting.
It's not every country that has to somehow align what they're doing now with some founding set of creedal claims or documents like the Constitution and say, we're just living out in continuity with those things. You can imagine, I mean, there's other countries who say, we want to be radically different than our past. Like, we're actually trying to get away from that. But it seems like an interesting part of the American political culture that we're all fighting over who's sort of more genuinely aligned with the founding era in this.
Who has Abraham Lincoln on their side, right? That's the other one. Right?
What I think about Lincoln is actually someone who did this very well. I mean, he made a very strong argument that not all he was doing, but what he was doing was just fulfilling the very intentions of the founders through keeping the union together and so forth.
I think part of that, too, I think part of that, that's a great observation, Dan. I think part of that is we are a creedal nation, which makes us unique, right? You know, and I think that there's a sense in which, you know, we've had a republic for a long time. Like, we're not constantly changing governments and so forth, right? There is something else embedded in all of those things that you've said, and that is this idea that, you know, you mentioned this in your question. There is this other idea, you see it in the originalist interpretation of the Constitution, for example, right? Mm-hmm. That somehow it's bad historical thinking, that somehow the 18th century, 1760 to 1790 or whatever, is, you know, has been sort of frozen. And all we need to do is get it out of the icebox. I'm really butchering this metaphor, but, you know, get it out of the icebox and just, you know, thaw it out in the 21st century. And there we have it. Right. And this goes against the whole historical kind of kind of practice of change over time, right? As if nothing has happened between, you know, 1776 and the present, you know, so we just, you know, need to go back. And what did the founders believe on this question? Well, the founders were products of an 18th century world that's very different than our own world. They were asking a bunch of different questions. They were living in a society without the kind of modern, you know, things, the diversity that we experience today, right? So that's another way of kind of getting at this argument that we were founded as a Christian nation.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, we're going to go to the last question here. And this is around more about communication than the first question here I'll ask is, when you've given, I'm sure you've given these types of talks about the American founding dozens, maybe hundreds of times, what tend to be the most common points where people don't like your presentation? And I know that would depend on the audience in part, but, and maybe I'm curious, did you see those in your Friday night lecture you did here, or were there different things that came up?
I've also had a chance now to read the responses. Like there's the foundation gives the feedback
for the attendees.
Most of them were, at least the ones at the one in Madison on November 14th, were no one pushed back from the yes side. It just must have been the makeup of the audience, maybe the makeup of the evangelical community here in Madison. There was one kind of subtle, you know, like a historian could make up anything they want to make up and use facts any way they wanted, which I assumed was a kind of yes person, right? But who knows? I think the thing that people are most, well, it depends what your position is. If you're we weren't founded as a Christian nation. I think when I talk about the individual states and the deeply Christian language in their constitutions, right? You know, the state I used to live in, Pennsylvania, you had to obey the Christian Sabbath in order to vote. You had to uphold the divine inspiration of the Old and New Testaments. Right. And that really makes someone who wants to answer no get very antsy. Right. Mm-hmm. And they'll quickly shoot up to like post-Civil War. And if they're knowledgeable enough, they'll say, well, you know, the 14th Amendment basically said that, you know, and of course it was the slavery issue at the time, but the 14th Amendment means that the states have to abide by the Constitution, and now the 13th Amendment ended slavery, so now you can't have slavery. And then it was the 14th Amendment that was applied in 1947 in the Hugo Black Wolf separation case, right? That now these states can no longer say you have to believe in the New Testament to vote or run for office because the United States Constitution doesn't say that. Right, Article 6, the test oath clause. Yeah. So I think that gets people. And then I like to kind of, you know, really get them nervous by saying, well, and also if you want to say back to your question about the nation, what was a nation? Yeah. Back to this Articles of Confederation, right?
Yeah, yeah.
All of these states had their own test oaths, religious establishments. Virginia was the only one that didn't. And okay, if that's your nation between 1781 and 1787.
Yeah.
Right in the heart of the founding period, you know, there's no central government.
Right.
You know, this complicates things.
A lot of the things we would attribute to a nation were not there during that period. Yeah.
And each of the 13 states were making their own calls about religion.
Right.
And they were very Christian. Right. I think those who come with the yes, they want me to answer yes, will, you know, kind of immediately start thinking about, you know, they don't like the way that the Bible is employed, because most of these founders took very metaphorical liberties, if you will. I talked a little bit about this in the lecture, liberties with the Bible, you know, or they also don't like the fact that, like, I say, you know, I call the Constitution godless, right? Because it doesn't mention God, it doesn't mention Jesus Christ, or, you know, or any Christianity or so forth. And, you know, I think that bothers them a little bit. And then, I didn't do this at the Madison lecture, but, you know, so I'll usually end by talking about what I talked about before about Washington saying religion is the pillars, you know, and then and pillar of the Republic, or John Adams, the Constitution is made for a moral and religious people. And then they, you know, that group kind of, all right. But the very fact that they're reacting that way, you know, suggests that how much this period is politicized, right?
Right.
People, you know, the history educator Sam Weinberg at Stanford, right, always called history an unnatural act. But the our psychological condition at rest, another one of his phrases, is to want to see good or bad. Mm-hmm. And historians must see the complexity of it. That's where they're at. They're not, you know, you can use it later for some kind of political agenda if you want to, right? But our primary goal is to try to understand what happened in the 18th century.
Right.
And that's always not going to fit in one way or another with our contemporary, how we want to use the past in our right. contemporary debates.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. That actually is a good segue into the final question here, which is, as a communicator, where you're an expert on this area and yet you are often trying to reach a public that yeah. is not an expert on this area, what are the biggest challenges that you found yeah. doing that type of communications work,
yeah.
translation work from an
right.
academic to a public church or just
yeah.
civic setting?
On this question, it's tough. Because I don't know if I said this at the lecture on November 14th or not, but when I give this lecture, people show up with their minds already made up. I think I referenced this earlier in this interview. Mm. And they are simply there for me to give them historical ammunition, right, to justify their view, right? I mean, I have had people come up to me before the lecture and say, I don't care what you say. And that's actually a quote from one woman, right? I don't care what you say tonight. We were founded as a Christian nation. Mm. It's like, all right. I go, please come up to me afterwards and tell me if there's just one little thing that I maybe forced you to rethink. And they never come back up. So that's frustrating. I mean, yeah, I think when you're trying to bring good academic scholarship to bear on public questions like this, you know, you always have to understand the limits of this exercise, that that sometimes there's people that are just going to be kind of unreachable, you know, and so I think you try to, you know, just be faithful to the task of the historian in this case is calling, right, which is to present a nuanced, you know, perspective. And that's impossible even to do because, you know, I think some people might think I was there, you know, I justified their position or they looked at, they thought I was leaning in one direction or another. I'm sure people felt that way. But it's to present the nuanced view, and then there's nothing you can do to kind of control the audience. Now, or how they respond. Now, I will say this. Over the years, so I've been doing this, I've been lecturing on this topic now for 15 years or more. I started off really cocky, right? I was the academic. I knew this stuff, you know, and blah, blah, blah. And that wasn't kind of winning over people's hearts and minds. It wasn't going well, you know. But then I just let the material speak. You know, if you let the material speak, it's always, history's always complex. The human experience is always complex. It's always nuanced, right? No, you know, my daughters yell at me all the time, Dad, don't put me in a box. You know, I'm not like that. You're assuming, you know, we're all complex human beings. If you lean into that and allow that to be the guiding principle of a history lecture, usually you realize that there's a certain kind of humility involved in this work. We can never truly know. And the past is so far away, we do our best, right? And that's caused me, I think, to be less kind of snarky or less kind of antagonistic in the lecture. Now, again, some people may have thought I was antagonistic at the Madison lecture. Well, I would just say you should have seen me when I was, you know, 35 years old or, you know, 40 years old.
Yeah. I don't think that was the main takeaway, John, is that you were being antagonistic.
I don't think so. I hope not.
It's an enduring challenge of this work, whether it's that topic or many of the topics a lot of us here at the Lumen Center talk about, that there is a lot of, I mean, that's one reason why they're interesting questions is because people have a lot of investment in them and in their answers. And then there's also this, if people do have investment in the answers, then they're going to be less open to new ideas or new perspectives.
Well, one of the things I really appreciate here about being at the Lumen Center is where I think we're committed, right? You're the director of the center, so feel free if I say anything wrong to correct me. But I think we're committed to sort of talking about building those bridges, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any place in the country where we have long and deep conversations about how to build bridges, not only between Christian scholarship and the academic world of, say, Madison or the University of Wisconsin, but also the church.
Right.
And in some ways, I think you once said this, Dan, and it's right on the mark. You know, and sometimes, some ways, a lot of our work is less about the content of history than it is about communication. Yeah, right? It seems like a lot of our conversations at the Lumen Center are largely about how to communicate rather than, you know, our disciplines.
Yes. Yeah. That's something I've just come to realize, that it's one thing to know something. It's another thing to be able to communicate it well to others. So thank you, John, for the conversation.
Thanks. This was fun.
Yeah. Thank you for tuning in to the Upwards podcast. We hope you've enjoyed today's conversation. For more information about the Stephen and Laurel Brown Foundation, you can head to slbf.org and check out the Upwards podcast. We have over 150 episodes that are conversations like this on all types of topics. Also check out slbf.org/events for our upcoming events here in Madison. Until next time, go in peace.
Thank you for tuning into the Upwards podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's conversation. For more information about the S.L. Brown Foundation and Upper House, please visit slbf.org. Go in peace to be a light on our campuses, in our churches, and in our businesses so that all may flourish.